Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Car shopping can be confusing with terms like dealer price, list price, and invoice. TrueCar shows you what other people paid for the car you want so you can recognize a good price when you're ready to buy a new or used car. Visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. We're joined now by Charles Davis at CFD22 is his Twitter handle. Charles, thanks for getting up early with us here. And I know you had the Dallas Cowboys on the road against the Washington Redskins, so let's start there. How good did Dak look to you? How good did the Dallas Cowboys look overall?
Let's start with anyone who wants to poke holes in that team right now will look at their competition to start the season. Right, Clay?
Yes.
You know, Giants coming in, Washington now 0-2, et cetera. Okay, I get that. Let's talk about Dak very quickly. I don't care if you're throwing routes versus air. 26 of 30 is throwing the ball well.
Yes.
And he did it against a Washington team that I think you and I talked about 2 weeks ago. And, you know, I don't think I was by myself on this. I thought their defense could be good enough that they would be in the top 10 in the NFL and maybe push for a top 5 defense. Well, they've had a couple of injuries. They haven't played as well. A lot of communication busts. Too many guys running open. But still, Dak looks terrific. Now Zeke is back. Got over 100 yards last week. That offensive line is intact, and they took control of the game after the first quarter and dominated the line of scrimmage. Defensively, the beauty for Dallas is they still have work to do, but you know it's all there. They have what they need on that side of the football, but they also feel like they haven't played to as teams always have different mottos and mantras and the whole thing. Their thing is, we haven't played to our standard yet, meaning they haven't gotten any takeaways or the number that they're looking for. I think this is a very good team. I think that they're very deep. It's a talented roster. And as Howie Long, my colleague, said on the Fox NFL pregame show last week, it's a team that's built to win now, mainly because with everything that's there, Clay, Dak is ascending as a quarterback. People are going to keep taking shots at him. Keep watching him play. Footwork is better. Accuracy is better. That team fully believes in him. And they've added a little extra quarterback run game in there when you least expect it. I think it's a very good team.
I said beforehand that Dak Prescott not taking, you know, $30 million a year to me was crazy. I got to give him props. He has continued to negotiate. And the way he has played in the first two games of this season, to me, has made himself millions and millions of dollars more. If Carson Wentz is a $32 million a year guy, I frankly, especially if you factor in that the Cowboys got him and are getting him for the first 4 years as a, you know, rookie contract, a low-level draft pick guy, I don't think there's any reason why he shouldn't get $35 million a year at least. Are you with me based on what you saw?
He is playing to that level, and when you put them and you mash those two together with careers, because Carson hasn't been able to finish seasons,
yes,
that has really put him at that, as you point out, the $32 million level, which is a darn good level, and you're banking on that potential of him being what we saw his second year in the league, which would have been the league MVP if he doesn't get hurt in Los Angeles, I think it was week 14. See, that's what you're going off of, but flip it around for Dak now. He continues to get better. What we're seeing right now, as you pointed out, this is his time to continue to shine. But even before that, he was 32-16 as a starter, two division titles in three seasons, and by the way, has taken every snap in his time frame. He started all 16 every year he's been in the league. That's not normal for quarterbacks, okay? That's not normal for obviously anyone, but especially for quarterbacks, and you got to give him credit for that.
All right, you are going to be calling this week the Cowboys against the Miami Dolphins. Now, Minkah Fitzpatrick has now been moved and traded. I mean, what first of all, what kind of a game do you expect to see? It almost feels like the Cowboys can sort of name their score, because defensively they are so stout. I don't see the Dolphins being able to score hardly at all. And offensively, now that Minka Fitzpatrick is gone, I don't really see anything that is troubling or problematic for the Cowboys on the defensive side of the ball for the Dolphins. I mean, this is crazy to have basically a fire sale like we've already seen from the Dolphins, and for it to only be the third week of the season. How do you prepare as an announcer for a game that, let's be honest, is probably not going to be that close?
Yeah, it's a terrific question, and we're talking about that as a crew. And let's put it on the table, because I think otherwise we're insulting the intelligence of people who are listening to us, Clay.
Yeah.
The way this team, the way that the Dolphins are constructed right now, with all of the discussion in the offseason, with that T word, tanking, with, you know, the moves that we've seen that have been made, we're looking across the league and seeing guys who used to wear aqua and orange who were viable players and better that have been moved to other franchises. With the team owner, Stephen Ross, talking last week, emailing last week with the media, and saying the idea is not to get to 9-7 and compete for playoffs, but the idea is to win Super Bowls. So essentially what he's saying is, this obviously has my endorsement for what we're trying to do here, because otherwise you're just laying it all on Chris Greer, the GM, and no GM in his or her right mind would ever do this without knowing that the person up top signing their checks is okay with this. You better have it in writing, too, because all of a sudden, midseason, that owner goes, God, we're getting killed on this thing. Bad idea, you're out.
Yeah.
You better have that. All I'm saying is, when you put it all on the table, it sure looks bad. Now, you have to prepare for every game like it could be Georgia State over Tennessee. That hurts you and me because of who we are, Clay. But, you know, I figure might as well get to it. If everybody's going to come at me now, I'm putting myself on the line on this. That's how you have to prepare. What if you have that game? What if that pops up for you? As an announcer mentor told me years and years ago, every game you do, yes, you're going to have ones that look like clunkers. You better prepare like it's going to be the biggest story in your sport that weekend, because that underdog goes out to play. Now, put it on the line again. Just what you said, who's recognizable for Miami? Who's going to make plays for Miami? Who's going to play quarterback? Is it Fitzpatrick? Is it Rosen? Can that offensive line protect him against Dallas' defensive front? All that has to go into this in our preparation. But first and foremost, prepare like it's the biggest story in the NFL, and then play it from there and see how the whole thing plays out. So I hope no one thinks that's double talk, because it's not. That's as real as it gets. You prepare like you could have the biggest thing going. Best be prepared for it, because it has happened before. But if you're realistic about it and you're watching it, any fan, any announcer, any person is saying, okay, this is going to be a major difficult deal for Miami to try and pull this off, especially the way that Dallas is playing right now.
Charles, 21-point line right now.
I mean, in the NFL.
It's unheard of.
The NFL. This is not non-conference college football.
It's unheard of.
This is the NFL.
Unheard of to have a 21-point favorite. Now, I'm curious, what you'll obviously talk to the coaches and the players as you get ready for this.
Sure.
For guys at the quarterback position, we've already seen an absolute disaster for the NFL. Six guys that we expected, if you include Andrew Luck, before the season started, to be prominent in some way as quarterbacks, and now backups like Trevor Siemian are starting to go down. If you are Ryan Fitzpatrick or you are Josh Rosen, do you want to go into a game like this as the starting quarterback, knowing the lack of protection that you're going to have in this game, and play quarterback in this league knowing what is on the line? For instance, Ryan Fitzpatrick's at the near the end of his career, so he may be like, screw it, you know, I'm okay continuing to go out there and gun, although I don't think it makes a lot of sense to him if I'm their agent. If I am Josh Rosen's agent, he's already gotten drafted in the top 10 and been kicked to the curb by the Arizona Cardinals. The last thing I want, if I'm Rosen's agent, is my guy dropping back to pass and getting injured and knocked out for the year, because what in the world is his value at that point in time? He hasn't been given a situation where he can succeed yet. This is maybe the worst kind of situation I've ever seen a top 10 quarterback draft pick face. Two teams, we've never even seen it, traded after a year, and now you're on the worst team in the league that's trying to tank so they can go get a top draft pick to potentially get Tua or Jake Fromm or Justin Herbert or one of those guys. Same thing on some level with Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, what would you be saying if you were one of these guys' agents?
Oh, boy. Well, look, bottom line is no one's ever going to publicly say they don't want to play.
Right.
And when you're Josh Rosen, considering everything that you came along with coming out of college, where there were people who questioned, does he love the game of football, right? We always get that whenever you're in a draft. There's always someone that's uber-talented, and we question whether they love football, that they'll do everything possible, all of that. Take that aside, there's also a toughness aspect to it, right? No one wants to be that quarterback who says, well, you know, this is crazy. I can't play behind that line.
Right.
But then you get a black mark next to your name. The truth of the matter is, you know all these things. Everything I think you've said, Clay, is pretty well spot on, where the agents are all panicked in the whole deal, but they also understand there's no getting out of it. Now, if you're Fitzpatrick, you're a veteran, you know how to deal with that a little bit more. If you're Josh Rosen, your mindset has to flip to, I would rather play in this game, show my toughness, and boy, oh boy, if I let my talents really come through and I elevate us somehow, those are marks next to me. Now, how realistic is all that? That only remains to be seen on Sunday. But I'm just telling you, Clay, with the mentality of an athlete, a player, I would believe guys who love the game and want to win, the mentality for Josh Rosen, I'm going to leave it there because we know Fitzpatrick's a vet. He's done this type of thing before. His mentality has to be, I want my shot. I want to make plays against Dallas. The whole country's going to watch it because even though it looks like a mismatch, it is the Dallas Cowboys. They attract viewers. This is a big deal for him, and this is an opportunity and a chance. Now, does he need help? Of course, all of that. But, boy, could you imagine in his mind he's thinking to himself, I evade that sack. I throw that dart over here. I step up in the pocket. I throw the bomb, and Preston Williams makes the catch. Does it sound juvenile to people? It might, but I'm just going to tell you, it's always a juvenile game. And Tom Brady's 40-something years old, and he dreams of doing that every week. But he has more talent around him. This is Josh Rosen. This is an opportunity. And he may very well start. I know what Brian Flores, the head coach, said. He said, Fitz is our guy for now. For now was the key. He may very well start Josh Rosen on the road against the Cowboys on Sunday.
Is there any possibility, as the Dolphins basically undergo a fire sale, that Ryan Fitzpatrick gets traded? I mean, if you're the Jets you're sitting around and you're saying, okay, we're down to Luke Falk. You are the Jacksonville Jaguars, I mean, they may like Gardner Minshew, but I don't know necessarily what they're going to do too as well. But when I look at the Dolphins, I say, I mean, Fitzpatrick to me seems like, the way that quarterbacks are going down, a lot better option than what some of these teams are going to be trotting out.
Oh, I would agree totally. And I would think that Fitzpatrick's much more of an option for teams that still believe they can contend.
Yeah.
I know it's early in the season, but Jacksonville, whether they believe they can contend or not, they've already made a move. They went and got Josh Dobbs. So he will back up Minshew.
Yeah.
Okay? And I just don't see them making another move like that. I would think more likely, could Pittsburgh do something like that? I know they just picked up Minka Fitzpatrick, but now Mason Rudolph is your starter. And remember, it was Mason Rudolph was the third last year. Dobbs was number two. Rudolph beat him out in preseason. He becomes the guy. And in that division, Baltimore is setting the pace, but no one in the North believes that the division is out of reach right now, except maybe Cincinnati. Okay,
yeah.
So you still think that you've got a shot at this thing if you can get that quarterback play? Could Fitzpatrick be a move for Pittsburgh to give them insurance in case Rudolph, you know, can't quite get it done, that sort of thing? He could be their new Charlie Batch, perhaps. I don't know, but I don't see it being a non-contender. But the answer to your question is a definite yes. There's no one on that roster that Chris Greer, the GM, won't pick up the phone and listen to a conversation about. No one on that roster.
We're talking to Charles Davis at CFD22. You can follow him. He'll be calling the Cowboys game against the Miami Dolphins this week, this Sunday upcoming with Fox. What about Jalen Ramsey? You live in Florida, and we'll get to the Florida Gators versus Tennessee for you here in a sec. But Jalen Ramsey has demanded a trade. What do you think of the Jacksonville decision to, it seems, comply with that demand and be willing to move him? Jalen Ramsey is an all-pro, Hall of Fame caliber player. It seems to me, in the right situation. He hasn't been happy for a couple of years in Jacksonville. What do you think about that decision if you are a Jags fan or if you are someone who follows that team?
Well, on the surface, you'd say, how the heck are you going to get rid of a guy who's an all-pro?
Yeah.
Figure it out. Are you kidding me? Just 2 years ago, we were playing for the AFC Championship and really an official's whistle away from maybe going to the Super Bowl. We can't be that far off. Many of those guys are still around. That defense should be formidable. Okay? Why do you get rid of that? Now, let's trace the organization very quickly, though. Who sits at the top of the food chain there? One Tom Coughlin, president. Okay? I think he's going to have a lot of influence on things like that. The Tom Coughlin you know, Clay, the Tom Coughlin I know, the Tom Coughlin, the persona the public has seen for years, you think that they are really enamored? You think that Tom Coughlin's enamored with dealing with Jalen Ramsey and watching that week in and week out? No. You think he's really fired up that he's going nose-to-nose with his head coach on the sidelines, and God knows what we haven't seen, you know, in the locker room, on the practice field, what's being said here, here, and here, and what caused him to really go off like that? Oh, he wanted his coach to challenge something, you know, and, you know, coaches have to make those decisions. Didn't get challenged the way he wanted it challenged, so he took that as a personal affront from the outside looking in, and now we're going nose-to-nose with the coach. Again, I think it's the culmination, Clay, of a lot of things that maybe we don't even know about. And we've seen enough from the outside world, too, over the last 2-3 years, haven't we? That's why I think that this deal is being made. You know, Antonio Brown wore out his welcome in two places very quickly, Pittsburgh and Oakland. I don't know that it rises quite to this level, but I think it's along the same timeline, especially with a guy like Tom Coughlin, who's running that organization. Dave Caldwell's the GM, but Tom Coughlin's the president. He's going to wield the heavy hand.
Charles Davis with us now at CFD22. You live in Florida. You are a University of Tennessee graduate. It's been a long, long time for you waking up and having to deal with the Gators. Do you see any reason for optimism at all? Tennessee, 2-touchdown underdog going on the road. Kyle Trask now starting quarterback for the Florida Gators. What do you see, and how is life as a Vol in the Sunshine State?
Well, it's very simple, Clay. You want to believe. You feel better after jumping on Chattanooga. Kyle Trask is a backup quarterback for Florida, but we haven't had much luck with no matter who's played quarterback with Florida. All right, we've had backup starters that felt like guys come out of the stands. You know, I mean, we've gone down there and essentially won ball games, and then Felipe Franks throws one up in the air, and there's a touchdown, and we lose. Butch Jones's team, didn't we have a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter? Found a way to lose it. You know, we're at home. We get beat on field goals. Would they kick 3-4 field goals and beat us one time?
Yep.
You know, and that was Will Grier before we knew who Will Grier really was. Heck, in Tebow's day, he comes off the bench his freshman year, gets a big fourth down pickup. We get beat. We're unfortunately used to seeing this thing play. So my optimism, I love my school, but my optimism is low on all of that because we have to prove it. You know, and by the way, if you've lost to Georgia State in your opener, it's going to take a little while before that full belief is going to kick back in, isn't it?
That doesn't mean
we don't hope. That doesn't mean we don't love. That doesn't mean we won't root with all of our hearts, because we will. But I keep seeing this neon sign in my head that keeps saying Georgia State, Georgia State, Georgia State. It's going to take a while to erase that. Now, beating Florida, that would go a ways towards getting it done. But, again, root for our team, Clay. But I think the Gators are a solid favorite.
Outstanding stuff as always. He's Charles Davis. He'll have the Dolphins and the Cowboys game this weekend for Fox. Appreciate the time, my man, and good luck surviving in the Sunshine State if things go bad again.
Thank you, sir.
That is Charles Davis. I am Clay Travis, and he is Eddie Garcia. What you got for me, my man?
Well, online car shopping can be confusing, but not anymore with True Price from True Car. Now you can know the exact price you'll pay for your next car, so visit True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Monday Night Football saw the Browns get their first win of the year, beating the Jets 23-3. Big play in the game came in the third quarter when Baker Mayfield hit Odell Beckham Jr. on a short pass, and then Beckham Jr. took it 89 yards for the score. For the Jets, they're now down to their third-string quarterback. Luke Falk had to finish this game after Trevor Siemian went out with an ankle injury. Siemian was in for Sam Darnold, who's out with mononucleosis. Speaking of injured quarterbacks, Drew Brees will have surgery on his injured thumb. He'll be out about 6 weeks. Ben Roethlisberger will have surgery on his throwing elbow. He will be done for the rest of the season. Steelers also acquiring defensive back Mika Fitzpatrick in a trade Monday night in exchange for a first-round pick in next year's draft. Fitzpatrick was the Dolphins' first-round pick a year ago. In baseball, Cardinals beat the Nationals 4-2, Cubs over the Reds 8-2, and the Brewers down the Padres 5-1. St. Louis still has a 2-game lead on Chicago for the top spot in the NL Central, and Chicago still has a 1-game lead on Milwaukee for the number 2 wildcard spot in the National League. We'll be back to outkick the coverage in 10 seconds, but first a word from Farmers.
At Farmers Insurance, we know there's a crucial difference between a kick drum pedal and your car's accelerator pedal. Because at Farmers, we've seen and covered it.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Underwritten by Farmers Truck Fire Insurance, exchanges and affiliates. Products not available in every state.
Now back to Clay Travis in the Geico Outkick the Coverage Studios.
Good stuff as always. When we return, a couple of different things that are headed your way. Top five, bottom five in the NFL. Also, Antonio Brown and the latest SI article on him and what it said. And the controversy of Danny G taking off Monday while he goes to Jason Martin's wedding here in Nashville. We will unpack all of that, give you the latest poll results. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Go further than ever with the Discover It Miles card. They automatically match the miles you earn at the end of your first year, so your 35,000 miles could become 70,000 Discover It miles. Limitations apply. Discover match for new card members only. Learn more at discover.com/travel. This is Outkick the Coverage, and yesterday, controversy exploded on the Outkick the Coverage scene when I was suddenly told that Danny G had made the decision not to actually come to work this next coming Monday. Now, for people out there who really don't understand, Mondays and Fridays in our universe are the days during football season when it's impossible not to have a massive audience, especially with this. So thousands of you weighed in because I asked a poll question yesterday, more unforgivable, Jason Martin scheduling a wedding for this upcoming Sunday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or at Danny G Radio taking Monday off the next day because he'll be too tired, hungover, to work the next morning. The wedding's at 3. I will be there, by the way. So it's not as if we're doing different things. And I think you're getting – yeah, there's the alcohol pouring out. I think you're getting a pass because so many people are opposed in general to the idea of a fall wedding. 72% of people said that J-Mart's Sunday wedding was more unforgivable than you taking Monday off. I think you're getting cover because this is a fall wedding.
No, I think our audience is just brilliant.
No. And J-Mart, I think he was upset. he didn't answer. Like, he's going to come on later in the week to try to defend himself. And if you're new to the show, Jason Martin was the previous producer. He left to go continue to do local radio, and Danny G gets elevated into his spot. And so you're coming into town on that Saturday for the wedding. But I don't know. This is a – by the way, why are you not bringing a date?
Well, first of all, that's...
Don't you have a date? Don't you have a girl you're dating?
There's a girl that I've been seeing, but, I mean, that's a long trip to bring somebody to a wedding. I feel like you should be serious, like super serious.
Totally understand that. But at this wedding, how many people are you going to know?
Let's see.
Me and Jason Martin.
Yes.
And that's
And I'm going to meet Mrs. Travis for the first time.
Yeah, right. But you don't know my...
She and I will have a lot to talk about, though, because, yeah, you know, we both have to deal with you on a daily basis.
Certainly true. But this is, for you, this is a, like, it's tough to go to weddings in general, I would say, as a single person.
Yeah.
Even tougher to go as a single person when, theoretically, Jason Martin's going to be pretty busy, right? Like, I mean, he's got to go to the wedding and, you know, take care of everything. Even if you want to talk to everybody and spend time with people, that's one of the challenging parts of a wedding is you don't really get that much time to actually visit with a lot of people you'd love to see because there's so many people there. And then you've got me. And you know me, like I'm, you know, I got my wife to worry about.
Antisocial. Like, all the more reason to drink.
I don't even know if it's going to be an open bar.
If there's not an open bar there, it's going to be a very depressing
wedding.
Did
you actually ask Jason if there was going to be an open bar?
No, I did ask him if he would come on the show, you know, in the next few days here, and he agreed to do that.
Yeah.
So I figured we would save all those questions for him once we get him on the phone.
Because his family's pretty religious. It wouldn't stun me if there's no alcohol at all at the wedding.
Well, if they don't have alcohol available, I'm bringing alcohol.
You're going to bring a flask?
Yeah. I mean, one of the good parts about being in Tennessee is I could actually buy boots, wear boots, and have alcohol in the boots.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a strong move by you if you came to the wedding only knowing me and Jason Martin and you brought your own flask and just got insanely drunk.
Yes, and the other good part about weddings, Clay, bridesmaids.
Yeah, but are there even bridesmaids in this wedding?
If there's no alcohol,
it's not like you're in the
wedding. There's no alcohol and no bridesmaids, I'm canceling my trip.
I just think this is research you should have done before you made the trip all the way across the country. We will continue to unpack this. The Browns get the win. We'll do that. We'll also talk about Antonio Brown. But up next, top five, bottom five in the NFL. This is Outkick.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Car shopping can be confusing with terms like dealer price, list price, and invoice. TrueCar shows you what other people paid for the car you want so you can recognize a good price when you're ready to buy a new or used car. Visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. It's a confidence show, particularly when we are joined by my guy Mark Schlereth. And Mark, I was watching you calling the game between the Broncos and the Bears down the stretch. And your reaction to that bogus roughing the passer call was very similar to mine. But for people out there who might not have been watching it live, how bad of a call was that?
Terrible call. And it just is depressing when you start, you know, legislating contact out of a contact sport.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, the quarterbacks are football, or they should be football players, right? They're supposed to be football players. And, I mean, I think it's pretty easy, Clay. I really do. I think it's pretty easy to discern if I pick a quarterback up and I bear hug him and I drive his ass into the turf as opposed to making a tackle. I think it's fairly simple. I don't know if we're hiring officials that have never been around the sport, that don't know anything about the sport. They just take a crash course in the rules, and they have absolutely no common sense. But I think it's pretty easy to see that that's just a standard tackle. That is, there's no driving the quarterback in there. There's no intent to hurt. There's no malicious act. And the fact that you can't discern that, the fact that you can't understand the difference, is not only mind-boggling, but it's depressing to me.
And it also decided the outcome of this game, I believe.
If you go through, and you know, again, I come from a player's perspective, which says don't ever let one play be the play that costs you a game. Don't let one call. But, yeah, absolutely it did. There were several of those during the course of the game. Chicago had two called against them that were every bit as egregious. So, like, it's not like it didn't even out. It was just in the critical moment of the game where they called that bogus call, and I get it, and it's depressing, and it's ugly, and it's, you know, it costs you a victory. But again, I always err on the side of don't let it ever come down to that. You have plenty of other opportunities, you know, to win a football game, and you didn't take advantage of them. So, you know, I'm not one of those guys that's gonna whine and cry and stomp my feet like a petulant child. But at the same point, I think the officials need to look at this, because to me, one of the beauties of the NFL, like, I still look at the game now, Clay, and I'm like, I can't believe I played that game. Those dudes are absolutely bananas crazy, right? And there's a beauty in that. There's a beauty in a gladiator nature of something where you look at it, you go, yeah, I can't do that. Yeah, I haven't been touched by the hand of God to go out and do that. And so, you know, I like to watch that. And if you eliminate that, if you legislate all that roughness and all the tackling and all the hitting out of the game, eventually, to me, it's going to lose a lot of its appeal.
Do you think that's just kind of a general war on men being men? I mean, this is a broader question, but I feel like football, because it is intensely masculine, right? Like, of all of our sports, football is the most masculine. I know people want to say, oh, Carly Lloyd could make it as a kicker. I think that's total BS, right? I'm not saying that some point in time there might not be an incredible kicker who could be a woman. But by and large, football is a man's sport. And I feel like masculinity in general is under assault, and football has gotten wrapped up in that in some way. Am I crazy, or do you buy into that idea?
Really buy into that idea. I believe that football is under attack. It has been for quite some time now. You know, we see the reports of, you know, concussions and CTE and you know, and it's such inexact science and such incomplete science. And there are people out there that have CTE that have never been involved in a contact sport or never had head trauma. And so how do you explain that away? How do we not, like, I always get really pissed off about this topic, because I have plenty of friends who are some of the best men that I've ever been around that played this game for a long time that are having no ill effects. And what we don't put into it is we say, you know, the equation is football equals CTE equals, you know, I'm going to freak out and kill my family. right? And everybody's been fed, you know, that line of garbage, that equation. Here you go. And that's what football does. And now we all throw our hands up and go, oh, my goodness gracious, we can't be around these animals. And it couldn't be further from the truth. And we don't put into the fact there's so many other factors. Like, hey, how does when you lose a job, if you put your identity in what you do for a living and that gets taken away from you, you're going to have a tough time. You know, you're going to struggle. And when we get into these things, like, well, how does drug abuse, alcohol abuse, how does that affect your brain chemistry? You know, all these different things. But we won't look at that, right? Because we want to attack the game. Because the game threatens us. And the game is too macho. And the game is whatever it is. And it really does. It irritates me. I love this game. I love everything about this game. And I love the fact that you have to have balls to play it. I love that.
Yeah, no, that's well said. Now, I want to go back to your game itself. You've had the first 2 weeks of the season, two incredible games. And in particular, I've never seen anything like the point conversion try. For people who weren't watching, you had the Broncos score late, decide to go for two. Then they get an inexplicable delay of game penalty, which moves them back, and they decide, okay, we're going to kick the extra point. Then they miss the extra point, but the opposing team, the Bears, are offsides, so they elect to go back and take half the distance and go for two. They hit the two-point conversion then. Have you ever seen anything like that? I mean, I've never seen anything remotely like that.
No, I haven't either, and it was crazy. And that rule is fairly weird because when you decide, okay, because you get the decision.
Yes.
You want to kick the extra point, you know, closer and re-kick the extra point, or do you want to get it from the two, half the distance to the goal, so you're on the one, and try for two, because it's your decision. And again, I haven't been around that. I've never seen that one. I got to be honest. I was a little bit in the booth going, okay, wait a minute. I'm not quite sure about this rule. Where's Dean Blandino? Dean Blandino, yeah. On line one, please. Dean
yeah.
Blandino. But, you know, that's part of the NFL, too. And it's one of the things that I hate, right? I hate the fact that we're a reactionary sport. You know, so anything that happens that we instantly kind of change a rule, like baseball would be like, wait, you know, there was a personal foul, a pass interference call. Let's wait for 12 years and study it before we actually change anything, right? If the NFL is just like total knee jerk, we're changing it, right? And so there's always all these new rules, and every year you roll in there and you're not quite sure until one happens in your game. I was not completely sound on that kind of on the structure of that, but it was crazy. I saw something yesterday, Clay, that was the first time since 1994 that a team went for two in the fourth quarter to get a lead and then lost the game.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me.
It's absolutely wild. All right, I don't know if you've read the latest Sports Illustrated article about Antonio Brown, but it lays out a series of – I mean, it basically lays out this guy is not a good dude. And I know there's a lot of people out there who are listening like, yeah, no kidding. But it doesn't necessarily mean that he shouldn't be eligible to play because he happens to be a bad dude. How would you handle, and how do you think the NFL should handle the Antonio Brown mess that we're in the middle of right now?
I mean, it is one of those situations that is really, it's interesting, you know, because, I mean, I don't think that you can just start throwing every guy, you know, that has a past incident or has an accusation against him on the commissioner's exempt list. And
right.
Say, all right, we're not going to play. Because ultimately, you know, we live, and you know this, we live in this world where, you know, Twitter and the social media dominates, and anybody can say anything about anyone without accountability.
Correct.
And, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're involved or embroiled in some baloney.
Yeah, let me stop you here for a sec. That I think is a big part of this, too, and I'm sure I don't know if you've thought it out, but if you decide, if you set the precedent that if, and it doesn't have to be a woman, it could be anybody alleging some sort of impropriety, but let's just use the example with Antonio Brown. If you set the example that a person can have a lawsuit filed against them and have an accusation made, like in this case, sexual assault or rape, and that's all that has to happen is a lawsuit has to be filed, you're effectively making it open season if you put Antonio Brown on the commissioner's exempt list, because the precedent you're setting is if somebody files a lawsuit and says that you did something to them, that accusation has to be taken as fact in some way by the NFL. And that, to me, then opens up a Pandora's box, because other people are going to look around and say, wait a minute, why wouldn't I go after the best players on teams and file lawsuits? You can't prove that this is true. You can't prove that it's not true. The NFL can't set the precedent that accusation equals punishment, to me, in my mind.
Completely agree, and it's well said. And you know, I mean, I get that the guy is a bad guy. I will tell you that you've got five in every locker room.
Yeah.
You know, and probably it's probably pretty close to a microcosm of society in general. You probably have five people that you work with in your environment, whatever that environment is, that are, you know, really crappy people. And I mean, unfortunately, that's the world we live in. So I'm with you. You can't just start suspending guys because there have been accusations filed. But obviously, you've got a close eye on that, and you let the legal process take its place. The one thing the NFL can do and should be doing is they should be doing their own internal investigation. They should be going out there, and I'm like, you know, I get all this stuff. Like they say, well, we don't pay for videos, and you're a $14-15 billion a year company. If like, TMZ shouldn't be breaking these crappy videos. You should have them. And then you should be using them to control the message or either to punish guys or, you know, control the message. But you're the one that should be buying out these videos. And the NFL, it's the kind of the organizational arrogance of the whole thing. Well, we don't buy, you know, the baloney. Buy the damn things, control the message, and then, you know, act accordingly when it comes to the punishment of the players if they are doing things that are illegal, if they are, you know, besmirching the NFL's name. Then I have never understood why the NFL, and I guess it's just arrogance, why they wouldn't be going after those things. You know, like if TMZ can get them all the time, you damn, I guarantee you the NFL should be able to get them.
Antonio Brown is one story, certainly, but a big part of it is just the Patriots' dominance and also the Chiefs' dominance in the AFC. I know all the injuries we're having at the quarterback position right now, but if Patrick Mahomes stays healthy and if Tom Brady stays healthy, have the Chiefs and the Patriots created a gap between themselves and the rest of the AFC?
And you know what's interesting? I mean, when you look at those two teams, the Patriots do it, not that they're not talented, and I know that drives them crazy, and it's probably one of the things that motivates them, but you know what trumps their talent is their execution. Like, the Patriots just know every week will out-execute you, and if they're going to lose a game, it's because you're going to be so detailed, and you're going to essentially out-execute them, and it just doesn't happen. They don't make mistakes. Mentally, they don't make mistakes. They're not in bad positions. These guys, if they get beat, they get beat because they physically got whooped, you know, somewhere on the line of scrimmage or whatever the case may be. But they are so dialed in, and they are so, I mean, they are the best team, the best coach team, the best prepared team every week. And that's how they beat you. Kansas City wows you with athletic talent, and I'm not saying that they don't execute. It's just that they beat you. I mean, you go back and watch the game against the Raiders. That second quarter is unbelievable. And all they're doing is running verticals. Like, they're just like, hey, let's put on a laser show out here. It was pretty incredible. And they beat you. They overwhelm you time and time and time again with their athletic talent on the offensive side of the ball, and eventually you break.
All right, so do you buy into the fact that they have created a gap between themselves and the rest of the AFC, or do you think there's somebody else who's, maybe it's the Ravens, who's out there that could make a run at them?
No. I think there's a huge gap. Of course, you know how this league is. There's a lack of overall depth in this league because of the way the salary is constructed. This is what I call the 80-20 rule. 20% of the guys make 80% of the money. And, you know, 20% of the guys make 80% of the guys make 20% of the money. So what you've done is you've created a structure in the NFL where if you lose a couple of your primetime players, you're in deep trouble. You lose your quarterback, you lose one of your top offensive linemen. because the bottom line is the rest of your roster is littered with guys who don't belong in the NFL who you've kept because you don't have to pay them. They're on rookie deals, and you know, there's a reason that the average career still lasts 3.4 years. And yeah, a lot of it is because of the physicality and the injuries and stuff, but a lot of it is because they just keep guys who can't play until they can replace that guy when his rookie deal is up with another guy who's a rookie and hope that that guy develops. I mean, the NFL rosters are littered with that. So you have a couple of, you know, you have a couple of injuries to keep players, and your team, you know, your team goes from the top to the bottom pretty quickly.
We're talking to Mark Schlereth. Last question for you. What would you do, what would you be thinking if you were a member of the Miami Dolphins? They now have traded away Minka Fitzpatrick, Laremy Tunsil, Kenny Stills. It seems clear that they're tanking for Tua or somebody else at the top of the NFL draft. What would that feel like? What would your response be? What would your thought process be?
Obviously, one, I'm going to go to work because I'm paid to do a job. And the environment and the conditions may not be great, but I'm still going to go to work because that's what I've been taught my entire life. You know, so that's just kind of where I stand. A dangerous and very slippery slope to go into the quote-unquote world of tanking for a particular player. Because the thing about this league is it chews dudes up and spits dudes out. And it chews up really good players that play collegiately and spits those guys out. So you just never know. I read something the other day, and I can't verify this, but I read it, and I believe it to be true. A buddy of mine who, you know, was a research guy sent it to me, and he said 75% of first-round draft choices don't sign a second contract with the team that originally drafted them. 75%. We look at the NFL and the first round as hallowed ground. We look at it like it's going to change our franchise. And you're right, it will change your franchise. Sometimes it changes your franchise for the worst. I just watched a first round draft choice in the Chicago Denver game named Garrett Bowles, who he had more tackles as an offensive tackle than Von Miller had as a defender. It may have been the worst game I have ever watched. He had four called holding calls. He had five. One was called on the wrong person. My producer here in Denver at 104.3 The Fan brought me a sheet in yesterday, said I had five holding calls, four accepted over a six-year career in Denver.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was – and, you know, a lot of these first-rounders – let's face it, they get here, they get overwhelmed, and they can't play to the point you think they're going to play. So I just think it's a real slippery slope if you're going to say, hey, we're just going to go after this quarterback and he's going to save our franchise.
Outstanding stuff as always. He's Mark Schlereth. Go follow him on Twitter. Watch him call games for Fox. Let me go ahead. Thanks, my man. Let me go ahead and bring in Eddie Garcia, find out what's shaking.
Online car shopping can be confusing, but not anymore with True Price from True Car. Now you can know the exact price you'll pay for your next car, so visit True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Monday Night Football saw the Browns get their first win of the year, downing the Jets 23-3. Baker Mayfield hit Odell Beckham Jr. with an 89-yard touchdown pass on the big play of the game. Steelers made a trade last night. They pick up defensive back Minka Fitzpatrick from the Dolphins for a first-round pick in next year's draft. Baseball, Cardinals over the Nationals 4-2. Cubs beat the Reds 8-2, and the Brewers down the Padres 5-1. The Fighting Irish and Notre Dame face the Georgia Bulldogs at 8 Eastern on Saturday in our Discover Card key matchup. Go further than ever with the Discover It Miles card that automatically match the miles you earn at the end of your first year, so $35,000 could become $70,000. Discover matches for new card members only. Learn more at discover.com/travel. We'll be back to Outkick the Coverage in 10 seconds. First, a word from Farmers.
Farmers Insurance knows the difference between a car hitting your bumper and a clown car hitting your bumper.
Sorry about that.
Because at Farmers, we've seen and covered it.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Underwritten by Farmers Truck Fire Insurance, exchanges and affiliates. Products not available in every state.
Back to Clay Travis and the Geico Outkick the Coverage Studios.
Next on Antonio Brown, we come back on Outkick.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com for a free rate quote. And we're brought to you by TrueCar, When it comes to selling or trading in your car, you need to make good choices. And with TrueCar, you've got a star on your roster. So when you're ready to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar. True cash offer not available in all areas. What is available in all areas? How about OutKick? Appreciate all of you starting off your morning with us. Last night, NFL Week 2 came to a close. The theme of the NFL season so far has been quarterbacks in peril, and quarterbacks remained in peril last night. Trevor Siemian went out, the backup to Sam Darnold went out with an injury, and that injury looked pretty severe if you were watching last night. I'm not sure that it would have mattered who was at quarterback. The Browns were never legitimately threatened at all by what took place in that game, and the Browns go on to win 23-3. Odell Beckham Jr. back in New York City makes an incredible first-half catch and then has an 89-yard house call in the second half, goes off for 160 yards receiving, and the Browns right the ship, get back to 1-1. Meanwhile, the Jets look like they're going to be in competition with the Miami Dolphins, at least as long as Sam Darnold is out, to be the worst franchise in the NFL this year. So, a couple of thoughts on this. The Trevor Siemian injury. So far through week two in the NFL, we had, first of all, Andrew Luck make the decision to drop out of, to retire from the NFL based on injury situations. Then we had in week one, Nick Foles break his clavicle. He's out, leading to Gardner Minshew in Jacksonville. Then we had a situation where Ben Roethlisberger yesterday morning announces that he's out for the season. Drew Brees out 6 to 8 weeks. Sam Darnold announces that he has mono and he's out multiple weeks. And last night, Trevor Siemian, certainly with the hit that he got, looked as if he is going to be out for substantial periods of time. So all of that is transpiring. All of that is going on at the quarterback position at a minimum. There is a ton of activity to follow around that universe. Also, last night, maybe after you went to bed, the Dolphins continue to shed assets in exchange for draft picks, shipping Minkah Fitzpatrick to the Pittsburgh Steelers in exchange for whatever the Steelers' first-round pick ends up being. The Steelers sitting at 0-2. Mason Rudolph has the reins for the entirety of their season. We'll see how things go in Pittsburgh and whether Rudolph is the guy or not. I would have potentially waited on this pick if I were the Steelers, because you don't know how bad things could get in Pittsburgh. Evidently, the Steelers still think they can contend for the division. I don't think anybody can contend for the Super Bowl in the AFC other than the Patriots and the Chiefs, so long as Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes stay healthy. Now, if either of those guys get injured, then certainly there is a wide-open AFC to contend with. In addition to all of that, we were just talking about Antonio Brown. I also gave you my top five, bottom five in the NFL. Here's the top five quickly. The Patriots, the Cowboys, the Chiefs, the Rams, and the Ravens are my top five NFL teams in order. Again, the Patriots, the best team in the NFL, the Cowboys, the second best, Chiefs third, the Rams fourth, and I've got the Ravens in the fifth spot. In the bottom five, I have got the Panthers, the Giants, the Redskins, the Jets, and the Dolphins. Again, the five worst teams in the NFL in my mind, the Panthers, the Giants, the Redskins, the Jets, and the Dolphins. All right, all of those teams, 0-2. All of my best teams are sitting at 2-0. We have been tracking this Antonio Brown story for a while. One of the things that we have been doing is we asked everyone to please let us know. We reached out to all the different police departments in the South Florida area, because I still think, and this is me putting my lawyer hat on, I still think the strangest thing about the Antonio Brown allegations is the fact that this woman, Brittany Taylor, I believe is her name, is alleging that she was raped in a civil lawsuit. In other words, she's seeking monetary damages, but not, so far as we know, pursuing criminal charges. And just take a step out of this personal situation. I'm not begrudging anybody who is mistreated and wants criminal or civil justice redress from filing a lawsuit here and seeking damages. Okay? But I do think it's strange that if she was actually raped, that all she would want is for Antonio Brown to give her money in exchange for that rape. Because I would think most people would want for the person who raped them to face criminal prosecution, that is, be in danger of having to go to jail and be held accountable with your physical freedom in addition to your money. Because Antonio Brown is already rich. No matter what he pays out to this woman in a civil lawsuit, he's still going to be rich. So that has never made sense to me. I would find her allegations in the civil lawsuit to be more believable if she were also pursuing a criminal matter against Antonio Brown. And again, remember, if she is alleging, as she has, that she has been raped, why would you not go to the police at some point as opposed to just filing a civil lawsuit and just seeking money? So we reached out to all the different police departments, Danny G did, in the South Florida area, and because we weren't sure exactly what the jurisdiction was. Was it Miami Beach? Was it Miami? Was it Dade County? Was it Broward County? Well, we finally got a response after a week. We sent in this media request on September 11th, and Danny G just forwarded this to me, and he's actually on the phone right now trying to call the Hollywood, Florida Police Department in Broward County. The Broward County Sheriff's Office responded to our request to see whether or not they had opened a criminal justice investigation, and they said, and I'm reading from their email, the Broward Sheriff's Office is not in possession of records responsive to your request, but they may be in possession of another agency. Please contact the agency listed below for assistance, the Hollywood Police Department in Broward County. So reading this, it sounds like Broward County might be saying, hey, we're not conducting any investigation into Antonio Brown, but you should ask the Hollywood Police Department to find out whether they are conducting any kind of investigation of a criminal nature into Antonio Brown. So we have reached out. Danny G, I don't know if he's on the phone right now. Danny G, can you hear me?
Yeah, he's on the phone right now.
He's on the phone right now trying to talk to the Hollywood Police Department. So that is the latest there. We're trying to get you an update on what might be the situation in that jurisdiction. All right. But I want to bring in the crew, minus Danny G, who's tracking this down right now, and ask you the question I ended hour two with. Are you in agreement with me that there is no good position here for the NFL as they conduct their investigation into this rape allegation? Because to me, the NFL has two paths here. The first path is they believe that Antonio Brown committed a rape in this case, more likely than not, based on their investigation, or that he committed sexual assault, which they may not believe on the rape necessarily, but may believe the other allegations in this complaint. If that is true, then the NFL is going to suspend Antonio Brown for 6 games or 8 games, and everyone is immediately going to say, wait a minute, you can rape someone in the NFL and only miss 6 games? That seems crazy. And I think most fans out there listening, most of you starting off your morning, you hear me say that and you say, yeah, you know what? That is kind of crazy. The other path, that's one pathway. They determine that Antonio Brown did it based on their investigation, and they then are able to suspend him for 6 or 8 games. I think, honestly, if they make that determination, Roger Goodell has to suspend Antonio Brown for the rest of the year and let Antonio Brown sue and say, wait a minute, you don't have the authority to do this. And maybe he doesn't have the authority to do this under the NFL personal conduct policy and under the collective bargaining agreement. But at a minimum, Roger Goodell has to take that action, I think, because I think he has to overpunish Antonio Brown in this situation if the NFL investigators believe that he committed a rape. Because I don't think that a full year suspension is still enough if a rape actually occurred. But I think it's at least better than allowing him to only miss 6 games and come back and play. The other option here is the NFL conducts their investigation and decides they don't believe this woman's allegations. They either believe that that they never slept together or that they were consensual in nature. Well, then you have the NFL accepting the word of a man over a woman, and the hashtag yes all women people are going to lose their mind because the NFL hasn't exactly had the best record when it comes to domestic violence based on how its players have been treated for what they've done to women. So I think the NFL's position right now is a good one. I think the NFL has gotten it wrong, right so far. That is, the NFL can't suspend a player based on an allegation in a civil complaint. You can't believe that it's true because it opens a Pandora's box because it sets an awful precedent. They've got it right so far. But now that they're conducting this investigation, I think that they are in a position where they don't have a good option. Where if they believe Antonio Brown raped her, they don't have the authority to suspend him for enough games. And if they don't believe that Antonio Brown committed rape, then they're choosing not to believe a woman. And it's clear that Antonio Brown, at least at a minimum, has behaved in an inappropriate fashion. And it's not going to be a good look for the league. The problem here, of course, is that the NFL has the personal conduct policy in the first place. And that requires them to conduct this investigation. And that requires them to be investigating alleged criminal behavior outside of the scope of this overall investigation. So I don't think Roger Goodell has very many good options here. I think this is a really tough situation for the NFL. Eddie Garcia, I'll start with you. Are you also in agreement that this is a messy situation for the NFL and that they probably don't have a good option here?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. And this all came back to the Ray Rice situation when the video came out and the NFL had to do something because of the outrage. But, you know, it's such a slippery slope, you know, when we've seen players being suspended for not being charged with crimes and the NFL deciding to get into this business. We knew that this was going to be a difficult road for them to travel. So this is going to be if Antonio Brown, is found to be, liable in this civil suit, then it's going to be a difficult situation for the NFL.
And I would say this is the most difficult investigation the NFL's ever had. Remember, they investigated Ezekiel Elliott for domestic abuse. They said that that even though the criminal charges were not going to be brought because the DA believed there was issues with the woman's truthfulness, they still suspended Ezekiel Elliott for 6 games. The Kareem Hunt video came out, and the NFL put him on the commissioner's exempt list, and then so that he wasn't allowed to finish last year with the Chiefs, and now somehow he's got an 8-game suspension, Kareem Hunt does, to start the 2019 season. In neither of those situations was there any criminal charges brought, so the absence of criminal charges is not an opportunity for the player to argue that he has been vindicated. There is a precedent that punishment can still ensue. And I think this is – I don't know how the NFL gets out of this situation without looking awful. What about you, Dub? Are you with me that this is basically an intractable problem, that it's hard to figure out how the NFL is going to resolve this in any kind of way that doesn't end up infuriating a huge percent of the population?
Yeah, I'm in total agreement. It's hard for me to see – how the NFL comes out of this looking good. It's a loss-loss situation when you think about it. I mean, like you said, option one, you suspend them 6 or 8 games or whatever it is. I mean, if you suspend them 6 games, that's 2 more games than Tom Brady got for deflating a football. I mean, that is not going to be a good look at all. And then if you give them no suspension, you're right. There's going to be just an avalanche of outrage because the NFL didn't believe women. I mean, they need to somehow get out of the business of investigating these off-the-field issues.
Amen.
Because, I mean, it just backs them in a corner when they have law enforcement agents that are literally paid to do just this, to figure out what happened and, who was right, who was wrong. It just seems unnecessary that the NFL even got involved in this in the first place.
It was a bad decision, and it didn't start with Ray Rice. The Ray Rice situation was a further evidence that it was a bad decision. It started with Pac-Man Jones, Tank Johnson, and Chris Henry back in the day and has continued since. It's been over a decade that this process has been playing out, and it's been a bad decision from the get-go. And honestly, it's a precedent that other leagues have followed as well. And now you look back and you remember, Kobe Bryant was playing in the NBA while he was on trial for rape. And some people say, oh my God, that's unacceptable. But my position would be that it's actually fine. And not that that Kobe Bryant was facing those serious charges, but that you should be eligible to play, in my opinion, in a sport if a team wants to pay you to play, so long as you're not in jail. That's my opinion. That's an easy standard to apply, okay? If a team wants to employ a player who is facing serious charges against him, that's that team's prerogative and responsibility, and the fans can respond however they feel appropriate. Let the marketplace decide. I don't think people are suddenly going to stop showing up for New England Patriots games because Antonio Brown has got these dark clouds surrounding him alleging impropriety. Fans will make a decision if you go too far. Ray Rice was a mess, but it was a mess created by the NFL. Remember, Ray Lewis played, even though he was charged with double murder and may well have killed two people outside of the Super Bowl that took place in Atlanta back in the day, 1999. And he's got a statue outside of the Baltimore Ravens stadium, and he may have committed double murder. So the standard for behavior in the NFL, most fans are amoral. Fans will judge other teams and other organizations and other executives and other players, and they'll point to them and say, oh, look how desperate that team is to win. But as soon as you give them a player that makes it more likely that their team's going to win, they'll forgive any transgression. And again, I don't know a better example than Ray Lewis. The man has a statue outside of the Baltimore Ravens stadium, and he might have committed double murder. But he was a damn fine linebacker. And so this idea that what Antonio Brown is accused of is anywhere near what happened with Ray Lewis is frankly not true. What's changed is the expectation about what the league should do for entirely off-the-field related incidents. And I think it's changed for the worse, and I think the result is the NFL has painted itself into a corner as it investigates Antonio Brown for an alleged rape. I don't think the league has any good options at all. We'll see what happens. Danny G trying to track down to see whether or not there is a criminal investigation that is currently taking place into this alleged rape. We'll update you if we get any answers as the show progresses and as we finish off the final hour here. But up next, we got Petros Papadakis. What is shaking in the world of LA, in particular with USC after their loss to BYU and UCLA after the beatdown that they took from the Oklahoma Sooners? All is not well in the universe of Los Angeles sports. We'll discuss with Petros Papadakis. He's on AM 570 LA Sports, as I know many of you are starting off your morning with me. Thanks for hanging with us. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is OutKick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back. Final segment, Tuesday edition. Let me bring in Danny G. We've been trying to track down to kind of put a bow, I think is what I mean. Put a button doesn't really make sense. Try to put a bow on this story and finish it off for you as we go into the day, because I think there could be some news potentially that comes out today on this. Antonio Brown, the strangest thing about this criminal, this civil complaint, is that there so far has been no allegation of a criminal investigation or complaint. And I just say this to you out there as you listen to me this morning. If you were the woman in this case and you believed that you had been raped, would you just want to sue Antonio Brown to get money for raping you? Or would you want him to have to answer to the criminal justice system? I'm not an expert in these cases, but if I put my lawyer hat on, I think the vast majority of people out there in our listening audience would say, it's fine if she wants money. You can sue, and you certainly have the right to sue when people treat you in a manner that is outside the law, right? Outside of acceptable behavior, you can get damages for that. But wouldn't you also want the guy who raped you to go to jail? If you felt that you had been raped, wouldn't you want to take away his freedom and actually make him pay for what he did to you in a criminal justice system? Antonio Brown's already rich. If you're just having him pay you money for raping you, you're allowing him to buy away his bad behavior. I can't speak for the woman here, but if this situation, if I were advising someone in my own family or if I were advising a client, I would say, you want damages monetarily, fine. We'll file that lawsuit. But also, you should try to get this guy put in prison, because if he's raping you, then he's probably going to try to rape somebody else. That's what I would say. And so we have been trying to track down and figure out what in the world's going on here, not from a civil complaint arena, but has there been any criminal investigation that has taken place in this case at all? We have now, Danny G, I'm going to bring you in, narrowed it down. Broward County referred us to Hollywood, Florida, and they said you need to ask these guys about whether there is any kind of criminal investigation going on. We have now finally put in an official request, but it's kind of strange. You forwarded me the email, and I just want to read. I mean, maybe we're reading too much into this, but the email that you got specifically said that you should reach out to Hollywood, Florida, to try to get any information you might need. I'm reading directly from that email. The Broward Sheriff's Office is not in possession of records responsive to your request, but they may be in the possession of another agency. Please contact the agency listed below for assistance, Hollywood, Florida Police Department. It sounds like they're trying to say, hey, these guys may be on it, right? I mean, is that crazy or is that the way you read it as well?
No, that is the way I read it, but I have an officer on my cell phone right now, actually.
Can they come on the show with us?
I can't patch my cell phone.
Go talk to him right now. You got 30 seconds to figure out the answer.
I'm going
to
do that right now.
All right, so we'll see. Play the drum roll here. Danny G getting called by the Hollywood Police Department in Florida as we're speaking. So we'll find out. Hopefully he'll be back before the show ends here to give us.
And if not, he gets a day off Monday. Good job by Danny G.
I don't know.
I just got the answer. So thank you to Officer Lotta who called me back right now. So the only thing he has on file are some loud music complaints.
All right. So there is zero criminal investigation into a rape.
Nope.
We have now confirmed that. So that seems strange to me. If I'm investigating this on behalf of the NFL, if you got raped, why wouldn't you have gone to police at some point in time? That's my only question. I think that does sound strange to a lot of other people out there listening too. You're suing for damages, but you're not pursuing criminal charges. Very strange behavior in my mind. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.